This is True Tales of Luxury with me, Mariella Frostrup.
My motto was the higher the heel, the better you feel, which I still believe. When you put on a beautiful pair of shoes, it makes you feel a certain way, as does when you have a new haircut. There's certain things in life that make you feel a different way, and I know it's an aesthetic thing, but I think that's important.
Hello and welcome to True Tales of Luxury with me, Mariella Frostrup. In this series of podcasts from Harrods, I'm talking to artists and designers at the top of their industry. Today, my guest is the shoe designer Charlotte Olympia Dalal. Her work is influenced by old Hollywood and the movie stars of the 40s and 50s. She's all about glamour and femininity, but with a wicked sense of humour. You might find a pink suede Las Vegas showgirl adorning the front of one shoe, or a gold leather Eiffel Tower on another. And although she's a past master at vertiginous heels, I'm pleased to say she's also produced the beautiful and iconic Kitty Flats. Well, welcome, Charlotte. I have to add the disclaimer now, really, that I have known you since you were a teenager. Your parents, Guy and Andrea, are friends of mine. And of course, Andrea, your mum, is this exceptionally beautiful, one of the most beautiful women on earth, I think. You take a lot of your inspiration from like 40s and 50s sort of style glamour. Yeah. And I have this vision of you and your wonderful mother, who I adore, sitting, watching those movies when you were a child. Is that how you were first introduced
that
to the film?
That is exactly how I was first introduced. It was through the old black and white movies with my mother and my grandmother, actually. It was something that I kind of got into from a young age because there was something glamorous and mesmerizing about it. I wanted to be those women on the screen. In fact, I thought I wanted to be an actress, but as I grew older and understood what an actress was, it wasn't about looking beautiful in black and white on the silver screen. There was more work to it. It kind of made me realize that what I was in love with was glamour. That was my first introduction to it. And then I had a wonderful, glamorous grandmother who kind of looked like it was actually obtainable to look like that. And I was very close to her, and I started kind of living through that and experimenting on a personal level. And that's how it naturally fell into my work.
And I sort of feel that must have been the case with your mum as well. You know, she's this wonderful, huge model in the 70s, Andrea. And, you know, she had this wonderful Brazilian style. And I kind of imagine that growing up with her must have been like sort of touching your way through the perfume bottles.
I had the most amazing dressing up wardrobe. I always say rival Vogue's wardrobe. It was always wonderful to just watch her getting dressed up and enjoying getting dressed up. So she always taught me to just enjoy it. And my grandmother as well was the kind of grandmother you'd go and see and you'd have to kind of dress up for. But that was a good insight on how to have fun with fashion. And I'd go backstage and see all the, I guess, the backstage action, like everyone prepping and putting all these women together, dressing them, makeup, and just all that energy just for that final show at the end. That felt more exciting than the show itself because it was the build-up, and that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be part of, I guess, the creating backstage, whether it was designing or putting the makeup on. That's how I got my first insight into fashion.
How did it first manifest itself in you, this desire to be part of that sort of background gang?
I think I started off, apart from, I'm sure a million people have said this before, dressing up my dolls. I actually had my own live doll, my little sister. So I would, who idolized me, as younger sisters tend to with their older siblings. So she would do anything I wanted. So on the weekends, it would be putting on a show, whether it be a fashion show, or I'd ask her to sing or dance or choreograph something for her. She was the perfect little model. So everything kind of started with her. And then as I grew up, I didn't know that you could study footwear until I went to London College of Fashion and did a foundation course. And my tutor said that I was focusing a lot on different shoes, hats, bags, and accessories with every outfit I was designing, rather than just designing the dress and squiggling little shoes. So she suggested that I go to Cordwainers and specialise in footwear. That was it, really.
There was a moment when when my daughter was really into high heels, you know, when she was about, I don't know, 6 or 7, she would only, in fact, for about 3 years, she would only go everywhere. And you know those flamenco shoes?
Yeah, yeah.
Because they were the only shoes you could get for a child.
Ones, yeah.
Absolutely loved them.
That
she
you
had
could
them
validate
in
as a mother her wearing them even.
Every
yeah.
colour. Well, I just couldn't believe that I'd created someone who liked heels because, you know, they're the opposite of my thing. And then she had her eye on my shoes because I had tons and tons of high heels from all the years of wearing them and, you know, all every different colour. I kind of got to the point where I really didn't need another pair because I had them in every different colour. And she used to look at them and lust after them. And then there was the terrible day when she grew out of them because she's a little
she
bit taller than me.
Shoe size, that's like, that would be my nightmare. But I'm the same size as my mother, so that
I was just going to ask you that.
That was very convenient. And even if I was, I'm sure I would have squeezed my feet in some way. I put cotton wool at the end of it. I would have made it work.
What age were you when you started strutting around the house in hers?
I remember from young ages actually just wearing them just for fun. Like, obviously, like my
Molly.
Six-year-old self would have, you know, obviously tried on my mother's shoes. She had a good friend who had tiny feet. I'm a size 6, but, you know, at the time, I think I must have been a size 3, which is tiny, and I love. That's why everyone likes to make samples in small shoes because they look so perfect. And that was like a revelation to me that, you know, how it really felt like not just shuffling along to like wear a pair of high heels. So that was amazing. But I think in my teen years, I really wanted to actually start wearing high heels. And I think that's what I saved my money up for, was to buy a pair of Miu Miu wedges, which I believed were so high and they so were not.
Have you still got them?
I don't have them and I wish I kept them. I don't even think I mean, probably it's good that I don't have them because I don't, you know, I remember them as this fabulously high pair of shoes, and maybe in my standards, they're probably not. Those were the first pair I got, apart from the ones that I stole or borrowed from my mother. But my mother's amazing like that. She doesn't like to lend. So if she lends them, you keep them. So that's a good rule.
I'm like going to remember that. I'll pop round Andrea. Yeah, do you mind if I just borrow that top?
She doesn't like to lend. I'm like that. Especially with shoes, I get that now. And I don't understand. I've had like friends and stuff, I want to borrow your shoes. It's like underwear. People walk in different ways and you get them back and they're never the same. So never lend your shoes.
I agree with you about that, actually. It's very true. It is too intimate.
People walk differently and then you get them back and their heel stubs are like, I don't know. Never lend your shoes. It's a luxury to be able to lend them.
Words of wisdom.
Yeah,
you can see where you got your sort of the glamour impulse from. But I wondered where the sort of determination came from, because I think from an early age, you've also been quite determined, you know, quite sensible, actually. You know, I mean, you grew up in a sort of rather peripatetic family. You moved a lot. There's lots of different influences and things. Mm. But you always seemed a little bit like, what's she called in AbFab, the daughter, the very serious
Saffy.
Daughter? Saffy.
I guess I still am a bit of the Saffy, but I always knew what I wanted to do. I've always had a kind of a creative stance on things, and I've always liked to make things. So if it wasn't shoes, I probably would have been a makeup artist, or if it wasn't that, I would have probably done set design. But it's always about visualizing things and going back. I think it's just going back to the past. I'm very nostalgic, so it hasn't just been aesthetic. It's the feeling that it evokes, actually, which is...
What's the feeling that it evokes?
I don't know, maybe I came from that era in a past life, but it really resonates with me. It's something that I look to in most things without knowing it, whether it's even, I don't know, how I print my business cards, to how I do my hair on a personal level, to how, probably not how I dress my children, because I've got 4 boys and they definitely would not last 1 minute looking beautiful like back in the day.
Are they all wearing leopard
they're all
print
in
dresses?
They're all boys. One of them is always in leopard print, but the rest are in camo. But I think most people resonate with a certain era. And for me, it was the 40s. I always say I'm sandwiched between the 30s and the 50s. I love the glamour of the 40s, the playfulness of the 50s. Americana, 1940s Americana. And it just, you know, it's almost like make-believe in a way. It is, isn't it? It's not real. And that's what I love about it.
You recently created a range of bags, or quite recently, and called them all after male actors.
Oh, yeah, I did. When I launched my leather goods, I named them after male names, because all my shoes are my girls. I named them after women. And I just said, in a very tongue-in-cheek way, that I'd rather have a man on my arm than a woman. So I just had my handbags named after Bogart, Gable, Dean, loads of them, all the men that I probably would have liked to have had on my arm back in the day if I was around, but didn't. So in my own funny way, I did.
What's your... I mean, you've designed so many different ranges of shoes, but what's the favourite shoe that you've designed? What's the one that...
what my favourite child is. My favourite shoe that I design. I like my more playful shoes. The essence of the brand, especially when I was starting off trying to establish myself as a designer, I started off with all very high heels because that was my aesthetic and it was meant to be a glamorous brand. And now I'm wearing my lower heels as you look under the
I'm
table.
Checking under the table. So great.
But
I
they're
love
still
them.
A little bit playful. Maybe the less playful ones that I'm wearing. But I like my more playful ones. I like to have a bit of humor in my work. But at the same time, I always think because they're shoes, they are more grounded, so to speak. So even if I have something somewhat ridiculous, what might appear ridiculous if you're holding it, once something's put on your feet, it already, well, I guess,
brings it down to earth.
Brings it down to earth in a way because you're not—it's not on your eye level. So I quite like that you can play a bit more with accessories in that way, and they're a product at the end of the day. And what I love doing is making products, and I'm very much inspired by things that I love. I collect lots of stuff.
What kind of stuff? You knew
just,
I was going to ask you that.
Things, whether it's perfume, but pretty things. I love beautiful objects. So whether it's perfume bottles to ceramic mermaids, just little things I love collecting, and I translate that into a heel or into an upper of the shoe, or even if it's a small detail. Sometimes, you know, something's got fruit all over it, I'll call it a tutti frutti shoe, because at the end of the day, you know, it'll be remembered more as that than if it were called, you know, Lucy or something, because it has to kind of make sense sometimes.
It's interesting that
it'll be obvious
that you say that you're wearing a lower heel today. And that when you started out, it was all about high heels and things. Do you think that it, in terms of shoes, that's maybe where some of the most radical changes have happened in fashion in the last sort of 15 or 20 years? Because it feels to me it could be just because I'm now at the point where I really can't be bothered wearing high heels. I just can't make the effort, can't be bothered. But it does feel like more and more people are looking. And, you know, it used to be that flat shoes or shoes with a kitten heel and things, no one paid that much attention to them. So they were never very designed particularly. But now it feels like there's an awful lot more interest.
Yeah, especially with, I guess, sportswear shoes as well.
Yeah, but also just maybe women being out at work and just having to, you know, get from A to B. And I don't know.
No, absolutely. And I think for me, it was always the harder thing to design, actually. So I started off doing very high heels just because it's naturally a glamorous thing. You think high heels. And I am not particularly tall, but I've grown to learn that I'm not actually that particularly short either. But I always had a very tall best friend, so I always wanted to do high heels. But there's more to design with a high heel. There's the heel also, and you've got a different silhouette. And I love designing in a silhouette. With flats, for me, it's harder because then you're just working with the upper. For me, as a product designer, which is where I came from, actually, I studied product design. Having a heel to design as well made it more of my kind of product. But yes, there are more flat shoes, and that's more, you know, even on a personal level now, even just with more children and running around, you know, flats are more and more prominent in my own life. And as a younger designer, I mean, I was going to the airport in the highest heels in the world, mainly because it wouldn't fit in my suitcase. I'd wear the biggest platforms on the plane, and then, you know, the flats go in the suitcase.
I'm laughing because you
carry more shoes.
With some people, it's hiking boots, but with you, Charlotte.
It was always, not now. It definitely isn't now. One of my more well-known shoes is a flat. It's called a Kitty flat. It's got a little cat face on it.
Isn't that one of your most iconic, like, best-selling shoes?
Ironically, it's like my flattest one. That was a fun one to do. It came from wanting to design a smoking slipper as typically worn back in the day by men. And just to have the vamp, I cut out the cat ears and instead of the monogram, put a cat face on it and made it a bit more feminine, I guess. But yeah, it's a good thing that there are more flats around and that women can enjoy wearing them more and going to work in them, and it's not just limited or pigeonholed into women having to wear high heels.
I'm thrilled that it's thrown out the gauntlet.
10 years
for you.
Ago, I wouldn't have said that. So my motto was, the higher the heel, the better you feel, which I still believe, Because when you put on, as a woman, you know also, there are times when you put on high heel, it makes you feel a different way. It's like putting on wonderful lingerie, it makes you feel a different way. Or maybe I'm just really old-fashioned.
No, you know what it is with me? I think that I only feel good if I'm comfortable. And I know that's the antithesis. And I think maybe if I'd had a mum like yours, I would have been more... My mum used to walk around in combat jackets and army boots, you know?
But I think also, I think you're true, because a lot of women ask me that question, and I always try to make my heels as comfortable as they possibly are. Of course, they're not as comfortable.
You can't dance in them, Charlotte.
But then. I think if you don't have the confidence in the first place, you'll never, if you already say, I can't wear those, you never will be able to.
I think that's probably me, sadly. I mean, I have. But I just remember my abiding memory of my worst memory of high heels was trying to cross Leicester Square. Oh, really?
Getting stuck in grates.
Trying to cross Leicester Square to a film premiere, really dressed up in this Loren Scott dress that was just
so tight. Yeah.
So tight. In these incredibly high Gina shoes, I think. Yeah. I'm sorry, you weren't making them at the time. And to get from one side of Leicester Square to the other took me
about
half
an hour. Was it the shoes or was it the dress?
Oh, it was everything. It was everything. I just wanted to be at home on the sofa in slippers. It was sad. Talk to me about how much you see, you know, great shoes as a luxury and how much you see them as kind of an essential part of the ensemble.
Both, like we were, I guess, just talking about it. My luxury is probably your idea of hell. But a beautiful high heel, I think, or shoe, actually, should we limit it to, can we call it shoe,
shoe.
Than high heel? Because I've grown from just high heels, is, I think, essential to most outfits. Maybe that's how I should have posed the answer before. When you put on a beautiful pair of shoes, it makes you feel a certain way, as does when you have a new haircut. There's certain things in life that make you feel a different way. And I know it's an aesthetic thing, but I think that's important. Not that you have to dress up and set your hair every day like I sometimes do, maybe not so much anymore, but I did used to go and still kind of go through a phase of setting my hair once a week like an old lady because it makes me feel good.
It's a ritual in a way, isn't it?
It's a ritual, but also, you know, why not? If someone likes to dress up in a certain way or dress down in a certain way, whether you agree with it or not, sometimes it makes you feel good within. And sometimes people need a little bit of something to feel good. And if it's aesthetic, then why not? Sometimes when you look good, you feel good. Or you feel good, you know.
Definitely, 100%.
So I think things like that are, you know, a luxury, but you know, sometimes a luxury can lend to something like that a bit deeper,
but
you know,
also
without sounding shallow. But you know, why it is a luxury, I guess. So,
as a mother of four, though, it's also that the luxury is the time.
I was going to say for everything, it's time. Like time is actually the biggest luxury, regardless of whether you've got the biggest budget in the world to go and spend all day in a spa. If you don't have the time to do it, then
does it feel for you now that you have four children and a business and you're very busy with both, does it feel for you even almost more important that you keep those rituals of getting
you
the
know
hair
I do
set
it more and- also I tell you why, because ironically, and people laugh when I say that it's low maintenance hairstyles, it lasts longer doing it the old-fashioned way. And it might take that little bit longer to do it, but it does last a good, you know, week if I had to at a push. And it sounds
gross.
Disgusting. But when you're traveling and going to a different city every day and my hair's set and I like to look a certain way, then, you know, it lasts. And, it, you know, I've got dry hair, so it doesn't go too greasy.
How much are you conscious of yourself as the kind of image of your brand? You know, because that's a different role as well, isn't it?
It became a different role as I became more the mother, if that makes sense. When you've got no children, you know, it's almost experimenting and that's your look. And then as you have more children, you, like you said, you don't have as much time to do it, or it might not be high in your priority generally. Like I said, I do it first and foremost for myself. I'm the kind of person that wouldn't do it for anyone else because I don't have the time to do it for anyone else. I wouldn't bother doing it for anyone else. And to go through that whole ritual is because at the end of the day, I enjoy it.
How would you
get to do my emails while I'm doing my hair.
How would you sum up the image of your brand?
I'd say it was a very feminine brand, actually, even though I don't think of myself as very feminine. Maybe it's because I've got like a balance now with four boys in my life and glamorous and playful. Playful is a very big point for me. So I always start with very flamboyant, playful, ridiculous stuff and then tone it down.
And how do you know when you've got to the right point? And how much?
When I'm not laughing out loud at something. You know, things can start off ridiculous. Like, I've done shoes, like a poodle shoe, and it had a poodle head on the toe. And I was like, this is amazing and ridiculous and
my daughter would
playful.
Kill for them.
Yeah. We can start talking about kids stuff, actually, because that's how I started my kids line. But
did you put all of the things that were too crazy for
no,
your
it's
adults
not even crazy
into your
because
kids
it kind of, no, because actually they're both, they're miniatures of the grown-up stuff. So it wasn't even making it more childlike. It's the fine line would be turning this poodle thing, which I then changed the head with marabou feathers on top. So actually, when you look at the shoe, it looks like a boudoir-inspired shoe. It's got marabou feathers, but only I know as the wearer, because I picked it up and bought it and looked at it, that underneath all these feathers is the little face. So I guess it's almost a little secret to myself or the person who's bought the shoe. They know it's a poodle shoe, but that's the spirit of the brand.
How much does your inspiration come from the fact that you really don't like feet?
My father hates feet. I grew up with my father hating feet. So I got a big complex, actually. And when I started designing, I didn't design any open-toe shoes. And because I don't think I've got the nicest feet either, my husband calls them Flintstone feet. So very nice and wide and planted, very good for jiu-jitsu, apparently, but not for pretty, dainty open-toe shoes. So I took that, what I hate, and tried to make feet look as pretty as they can again. I was very short, shorter than my best friend anyway, so the heels went high and I hated my feet and they were closed. But you can't make a business out of that, can you? Like 6-inch shoes,
well, you
all
have.
Closed up. Well, you can start an idea. And as I grew more in the business, I've met a lot of feet and I've realised that mine aren't as bad as some that I've seen. And that maybe it was just a complex. So
thank you, Daddy.
Yeah, thank you, Daddy. I love, I tease him sometimes. I show him like the most open, ridiculous shoes and he like tuts or shakes his head. Might have to name one after him.
Oh, I think you should. But it's got to be a really open toe.
It has to be a really open toe.
Roman sandal.
PVC Perspex mule. See, I even grew up hating mules and I love them now.
Is the luxury of having your own company, the fact that you can, to an extent, please yourself and keep looking for things that inspire
absolutely,
you?
Absolutely, because especially if it's your brand and I guess and with your name, you can't help but put yourself into it. But yeah, that's definitely, I'm talking about luxury. Luxury is having your own brand, making the things that you love or you see, not just necessarily without sounding like there's a gap in the market, but just things that, I don't know, really come within that you really love and want to see around. That's how it all starts off. And when I did like bags, I started off and it was just a clear Perspex clutch bag.
Which I think you said, you know, it was a natural kind of handbag for you to design because you don't have secrets, but you now provide coloured bags to go inside for those of us
somewhere.
Who do.
Oh, no, so it started off with the, and that's a material that was used widely back in the day that I love in that 40s. So I took that, but I made it a bit more modern, which is a square box. And ultimately, it's as simple as this. I needed to design a bag that would go with all my shoes and everything goes with a clear Perspex box. And I started it being completely clear, you know, people loved it. But then there were a few people going, but you can see everything in my bag. And I'm like, do you have any secrets? And they're like, I might do. And I was like, well, I have no secrets. So, but then it was just quite a nice idea to change the colour of your bag. It just felt like, and I didn't know why I didn't think about that first off and why I didn't offer it with inserts. So now it comes with a gold one, a black one, and naturally a leopard one, because everything I design has a bit of leopard somewhere.
You have been worn by a long, long line of incredibly glamorous, famous women, from Cara Delevingne to Beyoncé and on and on. And I wonder how much that is important to you.
It's definitely important, and I think people would be lying if they say they don't care, and I think it's a bit blasé to say that they don't care, or it would be blasé if I said I didn't care. Absolutely, I do. It helps promote the brand. You know, it's something you can't pay for, that kind of advertising. People ask me, oh, was the most exciting thing for you when I started when Sarah Jessica Parker wore your shoes and she was one of the first celebrities to wear my shoes. And it was amazing. And she's Carrie from Sex and the City and her thing is shoes. So absolutely, yes, I was very excited and I'm a big fan. But when I saw someone just at a party that I didn't know wearing my shoes, I never thought I would do this, but I did make a beeline for her. And I was like, you're wearing my shoes. And she's like, no, they're mine. I was like, no, but they're mine. When someone's gone out and like bought your shoes, It's really exciting.
It's like a validation.
It is a validation. If they're wearing them in the right way, quote unquote, or not, is a different thing. But it's just nice to see them out there. Shoes are meant to be walked in.
How much do you care about the whole process of manufacturing? I mean, how hands-on are you? Are you a perfectionist? Are you out there poking at people going, no,
I'd
no,
like
no,
to
no.
call myself a perfectionist, borderline biggest pain in the ass. And they know that, and I start my sentences with, you're going to hate me, but for me, a lot of it is detail. The simpler the shoe is, the harder it is, because then every stitch is seen. You can hide things under things, but I don't even like that. I always say, I want the shoe to look beautiful on and off the foot. So when it's off, I want the inside to look beautiful. At the end of the day, it's an object. You know, a lot of the things, like I said, are either hand-painted or handmade or carved. It's easy to call things luxury now. I think that term is used very loosely. But it is a luxury to be able to wear something that is genuinely handmade or hand-painted or hand-stitched. And I'm a perfectionist generally, so... But then, you know, when you're picking up a shoe that costs a certain amount and you're saying that it was hand-painted, this, you kind of want to look like it looks good. I've done a shoe that had a porcelain face that was hand-painted, and the first sample looked like she was, like, crying with her mascara down her face. And I was like, I know it's annoying, but let's try and draw each eyelash a bit better, please. And you know, it's so hard to say it when I'm not physically doing it, and I owe it to all the amazing artisans in Italy that are doing it, but... You know, it's like a marriage, either works or doesn't. But luckily, I've been working with people that literally know how to translate what I have put in biro on paper, because that's how I sketch, actually. Like, when I try to do it beautifully watercolours, they look horrible. My sketches are tiny in biro. And to find someone who can translate a biro sketch into something, you know, elaborate and beautiful and stuff is, you know, that's a luxury also.
Do you ever hanker after not being just in the luxury market? Because obviously the price tag of your shoes does put you in a certain echelon of customer.
And that was the challenge in the beginning, actually. And I, you know, no one sets off, I mean, some people maybe do, but it's the wrong way to go about it. I never set off to make super expensive shoes. But initially when I started, they were, like I said, and I keep using like this buzzword, I feel like you should ring a bell every time I use the word glamour, but glamorous and particular. So I wanted to have a hand-painted leopard on it. So it's going to cost a certain amount. And I think starting off as a designer, you have to kind of put yourself out there and show people what your design philosophy is about. So that's why I consciously did certain heel heights and certain elaborate shoes, because that's what myself was as a designer, and to stand out from others. You know, I wasn't going to just also sell 85mm court shoes in black suede. So it started off like that. And yes, the price tag was high, but, you know, try and make a birdcage heel with a hand-painted parrot in it. Without exploiting people, you know, it's going to cost a certain amount. And I think certain people appreciate the craftsmanship in it. And I think where the blurred lines are is now, especially with trends and people also doing playful shoes on the high street, which is fine and great. It's great to have affordable prices. But when you put them next to each other, it's not the same thing.
What age were you when you designed your first collection, just by the by?
I guess I was in when I graduated from Cordwainers.
It's young, isn't it?
Young, yeah.
What gave you the confidence?
To design a collection.
Yeah, to kind of go, this is it, this is what I'm going to do.
Well, I guess because for years I always wanted to do it. And even as a young person, you called me a bit of the Safi, I guess. Are you calling me a bit of the geek? I don't know, but maybe. I was always interested in that side of things.
Hardly
also,
a
the
geek,
marketing.
Charlotte.
No, but, you know, I liked the whole picture. It wasn't just about making the shoe. I was also interested in designing the logo and the tissue paper and the box and just every aspect of it, even the line sheets. I mean, anyone who's in fashion and buying, a line sheet is a piece of paper with generic images of what the shoes are, with the prices and what they're made of and what the color is. Even that I design, like I said before, I'm now delegated, and I still am the one that checks the punctuation and the layout, because for me, every detail counts, especially if you're trying to build a brand. And I wasn't just trying to design shoes. For me, it was, I wanted to create a brand. I think that was my dream, is to make a brand. So when I had my first shop, I wanted it to smell the right way and have the right music. And with each collection, actually, I used to change it a bit. Like the flowers would kind of complement what the collection was about, if it was tropical or if it was a Parisian pink boudoir inspiration. You know, everything was pink and it had to smell a bit French.
A bit French. How, you know, what, garlic?
Cliche. No, so no, for me, a lot of my inspirations do stem from a cliche, you know, and then there's the playful twist on it. Like I've made a croissant bag. I mean, I don't know where that even came from. You know, of course, not everyone in Paris, you know, lives in a pink boudoir and walks a poodle eating croissants and drinking absinthe and spritzing themselves with perfume. But in my cartoon world, why don't they? And why not exploit that in a way, in a beautiful way? So it's not poking fun, it's actually the opposite. It's taking what's
celebrating it.
You know,
we've talked a lot about luxury today and its many manifestations, particularly in your shoes and handbags and so on. But what about your own personal luxury? What is it?
My own personal luxury, apart from time, because I think that's everyone wants a bit more time. If only there were like 28 hours in the day, and that's not even that many more. Travel for me is a luxury. I grew up really lucky to travel to lots of places as a child on holiday, living in different countries and everything. Actually, I didn't even think of it like that. I lived in loads of countries, which is a luxury in itself. Not many people get to do that, experience different cultures, learn different languages. As much as I probably hated it at that moment, changing schools and being thrown in hindsight, it was a luxury to do that. Like I speak three languages, one of them English, hopefully fluently. Just having the time to actually travel is a luxury in itself. That's why I love my job a lot of the time. It's like I get to travel. And as much as sometimes I've been in loads of different cities or countries on different days, and as tiring as it is, it's not actually, it's exciting. And it's, who gets like to travel for their job? Not many people, like, you know. And
it's interesting that you would say travel, because of course your luxury item is the indispensable thing when you're traveling. Tell me a bit about it.
It's my suitcase. So, and it's a beautiful suitcase of that. I've always coveted a Globetrotter, and then I managed to do a collaboration with them. But that's also just harks back to those images that I've looked at a million times from back in the day when travel actually was a genuine luxury and it was glamorous. And
describe your bag.
Oh, sorry. It's a Globetrotter bag printed with leopard print.
Of course.
Naturally. But it's part of the set. This is like my carry-on one. It comes with the bigger one. And then actually the ultimate luxury, and this is like if you're talking about luxury in an old-fashioned term, was I made a shoe case also, which was a bit bigger and it had compartments just to put your shoes. I mean, that in itself is a luxury. How many people nowadays need a suitcase to carry their shoes in?
Lady Gaga, that's probably it.
Not even me. I'm like, I travel in like nothing. I grew up with a father who also was like, okay, we're going and you're not traveling with me unless it's carry-on. So I'm remarkably good at packing everything in one tiny suitcase. It's still a luxury to go out there and just discover things, I think.
And if I let you loose in Harrods now to get anything you wanted, to go to any department you wanted, where do you think you'd head for?
Do you know what I've always loved about Harrods, and I associate Harrods with, and you're just going to laugh, it's the toy department. There are very few great toy departments nowadays. And I think that in itself, just shopping is a luxury, actually. I'm a big online shopper just because I feel like I don't have the time to go shopping. The experience in itself is a luxury, actually. That's why having my own stores was really important for me, because it's about giving the customer an experience. And I think the experience of being let loose in a toy store is amazing for me when I was like 10. But now even I enjoy it with my children because they don't have that many, do they? But that, jokes aside, and this is definitely not me, but I've recently fallen in love with a watch, and I'm not really a watch person, so you could probably let me loose down in Cartier to get, like, the crash watch.
Okay, well, we'll keep you back from there today.
Keep me back
from there. It might be an expensive trip.
If you said, let me loose, I would love to, like, enjoy the watch department.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
No, thank you.
Thank you. You've been listening to True Tales of Luxury with me, Mariella Frostrup, and my guest, Charlotte Olympia Dalal. This podcast was recorded in Harrods in London.